Hi guys, my name is Joey and I am an alcoholic. Thank you, Chris Gates, for letting me be of service today, and thank you to my brother Chris. I love you, buddy. Keep doing what you're doing. So basically I'll just start from the beginning. I was born August 2nd, 1987. And I have, in addition to Chris, my younger brother, I have one older brother, and we also have a little sister. So I was born in New Braunfels, Texas, and shortly after I was born, we moved to Abilene in West Texas. So my dad, he worked for the state. He still works for the state. Same job, pretty much, same company. So yeah, we moved to Abilene when I was less than a year old. And I mean, I guess you would call it pretty normal childhood. I mean, there was nothing out of the ordinary, no traumas, I guess, nothing like that. I made friends pretty easily. I had my little group of friends. I had my best friend throughout my childhood. His name was Jeremy. And, the change always bothered me, even from when I was little, even though I was happy. I definitely got along with most people, but anytime I had to change schools, got a new teacher, anything like that, there was some anxiety and there was always some fear there. And that kind of stuck with me throughout most of my story, as you'll hear. But, as a child, I love playing sports. I love hanging out, having fun. I made all A's as a kid. That was expected. That was part of the deal in our family. It was, you're going to go to school and you're going to do well. You're going to go to college. Basically, that was ingrained in us from very early on. Like, that was just what the plan was going to be. And, I would say, even though I got along with most people, I was easily intimidated because I was the one of the youngest people in all my grades. And, I was also the smallest, if not the shortest kid. Boys, girls, didn't matter. That was always how it happened for me. And, so I learned how to deal with that. I learned how to adapt and make friends with all the different cliques, I guess, different friend groups. I had friends in every sort of situation. So I was never bullied. I was nice and I got along and I kind of knew how to play all the different sides. Like the bully kids, I would, help them out with their homework and stuff like that. And like, I just found different ways of kind of coping with being the smallest one. And my whole life, like, I just have this passion for playing football and watching football, sports in general, but football was my main passion. And it was pretty clear that from early on stage that I was not going to be playing football. As soon as it became tackle football, and that was even before middle school, that was elementary school, tackle football came along, it was out for me. There was just no way. It was, and so I coped with that in middle school. I started playing tennis. I could be great at that. I didn't have to be a big kid to do that. So I played tennis and I played trumpet in the band also. I was like the top trumpet player and top tennis player in my middle school. And that was, I kind of like, I found my niche. And that was by the end of eighth grade, we moved. My dad's job moved him to Austin. So we actually moved to Bastrop. And that was in 2001, the summer, right before I was about to start high school. So we moved across the state to this brand new town. And back then, Bastrop, I mean, it's still, small town. It's growing, of course, but it was pretty small 20 years ago. And, so when we moved to Bastrop, we moved in to the house, like, I want to say it was late the Sunday night before we had to start school the next morning. And that was already a week into the school year. So I'm going into this brand new place. Like, I have no clue about this town, about this school, about anybody there. And, so I went in there and I was the shortest, smallest kid starting in ninth grade. You know, that was nothing new to me, but like, I felt like all that momentum that I had built up in my childhood and all my friends kind of left that all behind. And then I was here starting completely fresh. And, it took me a little bit. You know, I was still playing trumpet in the band. I did that for the first 3 years. And, I didn't join the tennis team because I was afraid. It was out of fear. You know, I wasn't sure if I was going to be good enough. And I didn't have a lot of confidence. There was not much in that department at all. So it took me probably the first 2 years of high school before I started kind of finding my main friend group, I guess. And I still had, friends in all the different areas. Like I was in like all the pre-AP and AP classes. And so I had my classmates, but then I also had some friends that were like on the football team. I had some friends like the stoner kids, whatever you want to call it. By my junior year, that's when I kind of started gravitating towards that, you know, that fringe crowd. And that's when I started smoking weed a little bit here and there. And, it wasn't anything, you know, it wasn't like all day, every day thing, but I wanted to change the way I felt about myself. I mean, plain and simple. And by my senior year, then I started drinking on the weekends. And second half of my senior year, I mean, I was smoking weed multiple times a day, every day. You know, it didn't matter. I was drinking on the weekends with my buddies, but I never carried that into school. You know, I wasn't ever like hungover going to high school or anything. That was just not part of my story, but I definitely found that thing that I really wanted to do. And I did not want to, you know, think about what my life would be if I never had a drink again. Like I was years away from ever having that thought, but, you know, I was still making A's and B's, and occasional C was starting to pop up, but you know, I made it through, you know, high school and graduated. And, when I graduated, out of the 400 people in my class, I was the shortest one out of everybody else. So when I graduated, I was 5'0" tall. So that was kind of like a, like I said, underlying theme my entire life was, you know, I wanted to change that. I wanted to put on this kind of tough guy exterior because it didn't fit with how I looked, and I wanted to change that somehow. So there was some resentments, I guess you could call it. There's definitely some anger about why do I have to be different? You know, why can't I do this? And that's what alcohol gave me the solution to that. And, you know, it's easy for me to say, well, I drank because I was smaller. I didn't fit in. No, I drank because I liked the feeling that it produced. I like getting a buzz. That's why I drink. And there's no other justification or excuse. Like, that's the bottom line. And, so after, high school, I got accepted. I went to Southwestern University in Georgetown, Texas. And, so I started school there, and like right off the bat, I was trying to get drunk at any opportunity that I could. But I didn't have like a fake ID or anything. It was just, you know, college frat parties on the weekends kind of thing. During the week, all I could ever think about was, man, I can't wait to get this week over with. Can't wait to get to the weekend, you know, see what's going to be happening this weekend. And, you know, I wasn't focused on school. You know, this crazy amount of money that personally I took out, and also my family took out in student loans, you know, and here I am barely 18 years old, you know, and I'm going to school and they're like, well, what do you want to major? And I was like, I have no idea. I was like, I don't know. And, so I just kind of like went along with it. I barely made it out of my first semester. You know, I mean, it was like all C's, maybe like a couple B's. I think it was something like that. You know, it was just kind of skating by and not really caring too much, but I just wanted to hang out with people and just have fun. That's all I was there for. And so that kind of continued into the second semester of my freshman year. Grades again, not great. You know, I lost my scholarship and it's like, well, I guess I have to take out more loans to cover that. So, you know, by the end of my freshman year, I grew 9 inches taller. So to where I'm at now, 5'9". And so then I had this confidence that I'd never had before. But in reality, a lot of it was just false confidence because I was drinking. I was already at that point. I felt like I was only myself if I was under the influence of something. And it just so happened that alcohol was my thing, but anything else anybody had around me, I mean, I was going to do it. There was no saying no. You know, if there were other people doing it, I was game. Like, let's do it. And, you know, that was a lot of that. Yeah, it was just to build up this front that I got it going on. I don't give a shit. Like, I'll do what I want kind of thing. And, whereas it was conflicted with the inside, because the real me was trying to be like a nice person. But so you can see where this conflict, I want to be a nice guy, but I also want to be a tough guy. And, you know, it just wasn't meshing. My exterior and interior were not meshing at all. So fast forward to my second year of college. I met this girl and we started dating, and after 2.5 months I proposed to her, and I'm 19 years old at the time. And so I met her, we started dating the next week, and within 2.5 months, New Year's Eve of 2006, we got engaged. So pretty quick after that, we moved in together. We got a house and a couple of dogs, got her a puppy on Valentine's Day, that sort of thing. In my head, everything was fine. You know, in my head, I was not an alcoholic. Everybody was drinking. There's no issue here. But, you know, I was in that delusion. That's all it was. And then, so by the time I was a senior and I was about 2 months away from graduation, that she broke up with me. And, so, you know, I couldn't figure out why. I was like, you know, why, what did I do? You know, I was always faithful. You know, I didn't cheat on her. What could I have done? And, you know, it was poor me. And all I was doing was making it about myself. And, you know, it was obvious to everybody else around but me that I'm not spending time with her on the weekends. I'm going and hanging out with people, you know, just getting drunk. That's all I was doing. I was like, I was not available physically or emotionally, anything like that. Like I had a one track mind, but in my head, it was fine. Everything was supposed to be good. It was supposed to be this fairy tale. And, that wasn't enough for me to realize there was an issue. There was something serious going on here. And, so anyway, I managed to graduate on time. And that was in 2009. Got my degree. Then I was entitled after that. It became the, I want my dream job. I'm going to sit here and wait for it to be brought to me. I'm not willing to do anything. I want the easy way out. I want to make money and I want it to be easy. I can't stress that enough. Got to have the easy way. And, you know, sure enough, that did not happen. So there I was back at living at my parents' house. And I was trying to find a job and it just wasn't happening. And, you know, I guess that was definitely for a reason, because I decided to go back to school the following January. So I got accepted to the master's program at A&M Corpus. So I moved down to Corpus Christi with a good buddy. And, you know, we lived together down there, and I was doing well, I thought, you know, and relatively school-wise, I guess I was for three semesters. But again, all I wanted to do, just drink whatever I needed to do to get through this week so I can get to the weekend, drink. And, you know, I was doing well after three semesters. Going into my fourth semester, which would have been my last one, I flunked out. I flunked out of the master's program with one semester left. And I decided logically that I'm going to go work at this bar. So alcoholic is like, yeah, that sounds about right. I'll go work at this bar. So then I ended up, you know, bartending for the next 4 or 5 years. And, you know, that's when it finally got to be too much, because I was at work and I had a seizure and I fell off a stepladder and fractured my shoulder and, dislocated it, tore my labrum, all that. And, because I was fucked up. I was drunk working and, you know, I ended up getting workers' comp and all this stuff, and that didn't stop me. I was going to physical therapy and then going home and drinking. And it was just, that wasn't enough. So I had to repeat that. And then I was having multiple seizures over the course of, you know, a year or so. And I eventually woke up in the hospital, and it was a doctor on a screen, a televisit. It was just a man asked me, do you want to go to detox? And in my head, I said, I don't even know what that is. I've never heard of it, but what came out was, yes, I do. So I did. And that was in 2016. That was the first time I, you know, was made aware that there was something going on. This is not normal. And, so I went to detox. My parents, they basically picked me up from Corpus Christi with my dog. I had my backpack of clothes, maybe a suitcase, and my dog. And they took me back to Bastrop. And I stayed sober for about 3 months or so, but it was not because I was doing anything about it. It was out of fear. I was scared to death after that I didn't want to drink again, but I wasn't working a program. I didn't have a sponsor. I wasn't going to meetings. And about after 3 months, like, yeah, I can drink. It's just a little bit, you know, it's fine. And, so I started drinking. And so now I ended up losing my job again. So I'm at my parents' house unemployed. drinking. Like, man, how did I get here? You know, this is not how it was supposed to happen. Like, what the hell happened here? And so, you know, I was given a lot of chances by my parents. They just wanted me to do right and just stop drinking. It was like, I can't, you know, I don't know what to say. I can't just turn that switch off. So I ended up agreeing to go to residential treatment. And as my brother mentioned, I went to Synecord. So that was April of 2017, the first time I went to treatment. And I made it probably a month after I completed the 30-day program, made it probably like a month, and I relapsed. And then I was back to square one. Like, you know, I was giving up hope. I was so depressed and negative, and, you know, I just really didn't care anymore. But in the meantime, I was still living at my parents' house. So I was like, well, you have to go to this IOP. So I was going to like IOP and just drinking like every other day or something, you know, every third or fourth day, when I figured I wasn't going to get drug tested at my IOP. So obviously that was not sustainable. That did not do it for me. So I went back to Synecord second time later in that year. That was September 2017. And after I got out of there, I moved into sober living and I started doing the work. I got a sponsor. I surrounded myself with AA, and, you know, it went well, but I set myself up for failure because I laid out all these expectations in a notebook. I wrote down by the end of my first year, I want to have this on down the line, you know? So I got to a year sober. And to be honest, it was a week shy of a year when I relapsed. And I was not ready to admit that. So I went and picked up a year chip after I relapsed. Cause I was like, well, it's close enough. I got to get this. I got to show everybody I did it, but it was a lie. It just was. And, you know, I was very torn up about that. You know, that relapse, I felt like it was such a letdown for everybody around me and myself included. So within a month of that relapse, I attempted to kill myself, and a little bit after that, I got a DWI, and that was definitely another bottom, but somehow I got out of it, and I went back to treatment. January of 19, I went back to Synecord. I figured third time's a charm, right? You know? So I went there, ended up, I don't know, less than a month, I probably made it sober again. And, you know, I was just repeating this cycle. And, you know, in every one of these treatment centers, I ended up with a girlfriend from there that I was like, okay, well, they tell me this is not going to work and this is a horrible idea, but I'll show them. I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to do it my way. You know, that was just my MO, was I'm doing this my way, and I'll pick and choose which parts of the program I work and which parts of the suggestions I want to take. And so I obviously it didn't work out. You know, big surprise. And then I went to treatment later, and that was May of 2 years ago. So I went, okay, not going back there. I went to Lifetime in San Antonio, men's only facility, about 45 guys. Half of them are, you know, parole USPO clients, and a lot of them are facing prison time. And I'm in there, you know, there's no bedrooms and TVs and all that. It was a wide open dorm, bunk beds, 45 guys. I mean, it was intense. As soon as I got there, like, what the hell am I doing? But it ended up being amazing, and it changed my life. That was a 45-day program, and, you know, I completed that, and then I moved into sober living. And, well, the day I got out, the day after that, I interviewed at an Oxford house, and the day after that, I was accepted, and I moved in. And that was, you know, almost 2 years ago, and I'm still there. I'm there right now, in the exact same house. Same group of guys. Two of my roommates have over 3 years sober now. Another one just got 2 years. I'm a little over 23 months sober right now, because I surrendered to the fact that not only can I not control this, but I don't get to pick and choose which parts I want to listen to. And, you know, I can't half-ass it. I can't take the easy way out of everything. And this has been the hardest thing. I mean, it's the only thing that has mattered in my life is getting sober. You know, the college degree, that doesn't mean anything. The sobriety and the, you know, the clear-headedness that I've been able to get and able to pass that along has been so huge. And, you know, it literally is life-changing for me. And so I work in treatment now, and I have about like the last 9 months, I've been in treatment at working in treatment at two different facilities. And, you know, I work in Wimberley now, and like I drive down to Wimberley 4 days a week, and I'll take the guys to an outside meeting. Like, we'll drive back up to Cherry Creek, and I live about less than a mile from Cherry Creek. So that's so worth it to me to get those guys to some meetings and see that it can be fun. Recovery can be fun. It's not just all work, but I try to get them to see you have to take it seriously though. And you can't just look for the easy way out. And, you know, my story is proof of that, that the easy way out just doesn't work. You know, so once I changed that mindset and got real with myself and with my sponsor, and once I was able to kind of piece together, you know, all these common things throughout my life, that it would be easy for me to say, oh yeah, I drank because of that. Oh yeah, I drank because of that. I mean, I drank because of the way it made me feel. And, you know, when I'm sitting there shaking and having withdrawals, I was drinking to feel like I feel right now. That would have been the biggest miracle, just to feel normal. You know, it's like, I was drinking to feel like I feel right now, and I don't have to drink to do it. And it's been such a blessing to be able to reconnect with my higher power, to be able to do these things and just have a peaceful feeling again, that no matter what happens, things are going to work out. Like it's going to be okay. And, so I think I'm going to leave it with that. So I appreciate you guys all listening and tuning in.
That was a really good story.
Thank you, Joey. That was awesome, man.
That was a really, really good story.
That was awesome.
Really awesome.